Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. An incredibly important part of that war is taking place right here on American soil, and it is a function, at least in part, of the vast number, by some estimates, over 10 million illegal aliens in this country, and a hot flash of this battle space, if you will, is taking place as we speak, with the President of the United States poised, perhaps as soon as this week, to provide legal status to millions and millions of those illegal aliens. To discuss all of this with us, I am thrilled to say we have a full hour with a very special, deeply knowledgeable, and much admired colleague. She is Rosemary Jenks. She is the Director of Government Relations at a superb organization, Numbers USA, has held that job since 2001. Prior to that time, she worked for another estimable organization in this space, the Center for Immigration Studies. She is a graduate of Harvard Law School and Colorado College, and just a go-to gal on all of these issues involving illegal aliens, how they got here, what their current status is, and the implications for the country were they to be made by presidential fiat or otherwise legal residents of the United States. Rosemary Jenks, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be with you as well.
Let's start, and thank you again for giving so generously of your time to try to really drill down on some of the important issues you focus on day in and day out. But let's just get sort of the ground truth set, if we can, on how many of these illegal aliens do you actually think there are in this country, and why do people keep calling them migrants, or I guess President Obama is now calling them improperly documented individuals? Aren't they here illegally?
They absolutely are here illegally, and it is only political correctness that is driving these other silly euphemisms. These are illegal aliens, period. That is the legal term. And according to the Census Bureau, there are at least 12 million of them. And the Census Bureau looks at things like births in the United States. And unbelievably, illegal aliens often actually self-report to the Census Bureau because there's no penalty for reporting, and so they just do. So there are at least 12 million of them. Some people think there are significantly more, up to 20 million. But that, you know, that's a debate that we apparently will have when Obama decides to legalize some portion of them. But, you know, the fact is that of these 12 million, about 40% came to the United States legally with visas and overstayed those visas. In other words, they could have come as a tourist to visit Disneyland and decided, hey, I like it here, I'm going to stay. Or they could have come as a temporary worker, an H-1B, a foreign student, and decided they were going to stay illegally. The other 60% crossed the border illegally, because, as you know, our borders are wide open, both the north and the southern border. We have no idea who's coming across, and the flood of Central Americans, both children and family units, over the summer proved that pretty clearly.
And Rosemary Jenks, when you talk about people overstaying their visas, and they're 40%, that's an awfully large number of people who at least we had information about coming into this country. Is there no basis now for finding those folks, knowing who they are, in the fact that they've simply stayed on despite the termination of their visas? What's up with the mechanisms for monitoring these folks and assuring that they leave the country when they're supposed to?
Well, this is a big problem with our immigration system. We don't enforce our immigration laws. Period. Across the board, we don't enforce them. It's become worse under President Obama, but it has always been sort of the forgotten stepchild of the government. We simply don't enforce our laws. In 1996, Congress passed a law requiring then Immigration and Naturalization Service, now DHS, to implement an automated entry and exit system that would track all foreign visitors so that we knew when they came in and we knew when they left. Well, we have the entry portion, so we know when they come in at a port of entry. We have never created the exit system, so we don't have any idea if people stay or if they leave. During the 9/11 attacks, before the 9/11 attacks, the CIA was trying to determine whether Mohammed Atta and some others of the hijackers were actually still in the United States. And the INS said, we have no idea. We don't have a way to track them. We didn't bother with that.
And Rosemary, who is supposed to be responsible for implementing that now decades-old legislation?
Well, now it is the Secretary of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson, who is under a legal obligation, under the law, to actually implement the law. And just like his predecessor, Janet Napolitano, he has decided that this is not a worthy law to implement. So he's not.
So this is not a case of not understanding the law, or the law is somehow ambiguous and therefore they have some latitude. This is simply flat out refusal to perform an obligation they assumed under oath when taking on this present position to fulfill the laws of the land and, you know, the Constitution that governs them. And you're simply saying this is just a flat out, as we've seen, unfortunately, from time to time, as you've noticed, of the Obama administration, a flat out refusal to abide by and implement a duly enacted piece of legislation.
Well, and it's even
scandalous.
Worse than that, Frank, because the Congress has appropriated money specifically for this automated entry-exit system every year since 1996. And DHS actually, under Janet Napolitano, did some pilot programs where they took handheld fingerprint readers into the airport terminals to the international flights and fingerprinted people who were leaving to see if they could do it, to see if it gave them any results and if it slowed down the departure times and all that. Well, it turned out it did not slow down departure times. They found a whole bunch of foreigners with arrest warrants, active arrest warrants in the United States for a variety of crimes, and they actually were able to document the departure of foreigners. But they decided that they weren't going to tell anyone about those successful pilot programs, and they didn't. You know, and then they just decided, well, you know, that's enough of that. We're just going to pretend that didn't happen and continue to not enforce the law.
Yeah. And so what is happening with the money that is being appropriated for this? I don't want to drill down on the legal aliens who've become illegal exclusively, because we do need to talk about all of those who've come across the border with no clue on our part as to who they are or what they're here for. But just to finish this thought, Rosemary Jenks, what is it that has been done with that money? Has it been expended for other purposes? And would that constitute another, well, really illegal act?
Well, it's unclear, Frank. I mean, if you look, this is symptomatic of our immigration system. You know, what happened to the money that was supposed to go to build the fence on the border? What happened to the money for the entry-exit system? What happened to the money, you know, for all kinds of things that are supposed to be happening that aren't? The money is being spent, but we have no results.
Well, and let's turn quickly to the fence, because this has, in fact, as you say, been also authorized and funds appropriated for the purposes of constructing it. What is the explanation for it not having been built, at least over much larger stretches of the border than have been done to date?
Well, it's interesting because DHS has done everything humanly possible to not build an actual fence. They have, in some areas, they've put up vehicle barriers, which are essentially railroad ties, that they stretch along the border that are about waist high, so you can very easily just step right over them if you're walking. But, you know, they'll stop a vehicle from driving across. There are, you know, areas where they say that it is geographically impossible to build a fence, which is true in some cases, but certainly not for the vast majority of the border. There are places where they say, well, the river, the Rio Grande River, is enough. We don't really need a fence here. So, you know, they make excuse after excuse after excuse, and the fence doesn't get built.
Yeah. The fence doesn't get built. The people that we're supposed to be keeping out aren't being kept out, and they're coming here in huge numbers, and as I mentioned, we don't know who they are in most cases, and apprehend only a fraction of them, and even that doesn't necessarily tell us what the overall population is. We're going to talk about the implications of all of this and what President Obama apparently is prepared to do to compound it with Rosemary Jenks of Numbers USA right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined for a very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio by a friend and colleague, one of the national leaders on matters involving the illegal aliens in this country and what they represent in terms of, well, a threat to our economy, a threat to our security and sovereignty, and what President Obama seems to be poised to do to compound that problem. She is Rosemary Jenks. She is the Director of Government Relations at Numbers USA. And Rosemary, I want to turn now to this much anticipated decision by President Obama. He's unveiled, I gather, a 10-point plan, but hasn't yet specified the number of aliens that he intends to turn into legal residents of this country with a stroke of his pen, perhaps as early as later this week. What do we know about what he has in mind?
Well, we know actually very little. The document that apparently was leaked, it's unclear whether that is the final plan or whether that is one agency's recommended plan. But under that 10-point plan, somewhere around the order of 5 million illegal aliens would illegally get a form of legal status and a work permit so that they can compete for jobs with every American and remain in the United States essentially illegally, although the president himself even recognizes that he doesn't have legal authority to grant legal permanent residence, so he's created a quasi-legal status that protects these illegal aliens from deportation and allows them to work legally, which is a huge problem.
Rosemary Jenks is our guest. We're talking about immigration, illegal immigration specifically, and what the president is poised to do, apparently illegally, that might compound the problem dramatically. And Rosemary, you were talking a little bit about the extent to which the president seemingly is going to extend work permits to perhaps as many as 5 million illegal aliens. Why won't this be just a temporary adjustment in their status?
Well, we have to look back at what he's already done, which is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, whereby he gave temporary legal status in two-year increments and work permits to certain illegal aliens who were brought here supposedly by their parents at a young age. He gave that status to somewhere around 600,000 so far, and those people all now have a driver's license and a Social Security card. If you look at your Social Security card, it does not have an expiration date. So these Social Security cards are good in perpetuity until the alien reports his death to the Social Security Administration, or the death is reported. I guess you can't really do it. So once you have a driver's license and a Social Security card, for all intents and purposes under our law, you are here legally. Even if the deferred action is not actually extended, you're here legally. You have legal official documents showing who you are and that you were given these documents officially. So reversing this, that's key, because every person who is authorized to work in the United States has to have a Social Security number. They have to be issued a Social Security number. So all of these illegal aliens that the president is planning to allow to stay and work, they're going to get official documents. And by the way, when DHS issues those documents, it does not, in fact, verify the original identity of the alien. In the case of Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, they didn't even ask for photo ID. So if you're a bad guy and you don't want to tell DHS, as long as your fingerprints aren't on file here, because they do supposedly check fingerprints, you can give any identity you want, and we will issue you official documents in that identity.
A potential problem, again, of not just giving people an opportunity to compete for American jobs in this country against American workers, but also, obviously, for terrorists or narco traffickers or gang members or others intent on engaging in criminal activity or worse here, to be given essentially a blanket new identity and basis upon which to operate in this country. Go back to something you mentioned earlier, Rosemary Jenks, and that is that the president himself said he did not have the authority to affect the kinds of changes in status that he's talking about now. Was there some weasel wording there, or was that pretty much a categorical admission that he can't do what he's about to do?
stated very categorically in, I believe, 2010 and 2011, that he absolutely does not have constitutional authority to stop deporting illegal aliens or to give them legal status because of the way our Constitution is set up and the separation of powers. I mean, he laid it all out, that he does not have that authority. And then, of course, right before his reelection in 2012, he changed his mind and decided that he did have the authority because he wanted to essentially get the Hispanic vote. It was purely a political ploy.
We're being told by many of his admirers in the press that the administration needs to do this now for similar kinds of reasons, that the disaffection by Hispanics and Asians, even more so in the last election cycle, is a flashing red warning light to them that they better move out on this. So presumably this is a further reason for his abandoning what he said himself, as you indicated, Rosemary, was something he could not do. To the extent that the president is now prepared to withhold deportation to provide status of this kind, in violation of existing laws, is there anything that the states could be doing that would preclude this kind of thing? Are they not empowered, Rosemary, to enforce the law even if the federal government doesn't?
The problem, Frank, is that while states can enforce criminal laws, they can ask immigration status when they make stops. But the problem is that they cannot actually deport an illegal alien. So they can take the alien into custody. They can prosecute the alien for state crimes. But once it comes time to actually remove the alien from the United States, that has to be done by the Department of Homeland Security under our law. So once the state law enforcement officers turn over to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the DHS office responsible for removing them, then ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, lets them go under Obama's policy. So the states are very limited in what they can do. And, you know, they also have been sued by the Justice Department to stop enforcing the law, which has created a bit of a disincentive.
And the Supreme Court, I guess, has, at least in the case of Arizona, upheld the federal government's view that the states do not have the authority to engage in that kind of enforcement of the law.
The Supreme Court decision was very mixed. It upheld a good portion of the Arizona law. It struck down other portions. So the states clearly do have the authority to check immigration status upon a stop for an alternative crime, but they don't necessarily have the authority, at least under the way that law was written, to ask anyone they encounter for legal status. It's a mixed bag, but the fact is that even when they have a law like Arizona's that has been upheld by the Supreme Court, the states cannot force DHS to then deport the illegal aliens that they arrest.
And especially if they become suddenly legal residents in this country, which the president is about. We'll talk about what the Republicans intend to do about this act of presidential lawlessness with Rosemary Jenks of Numbers USA, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260, The Answer.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and five other senators are offering President Obama political cover on his unlawful executive amnesty for millions of illegal aliens. They've written him urging the president to act expansively to improve the immigration system as much as he can.
They claim that such steps are both necessary and rooted in precedents by previous chief executives. The spectacle of lawmakers inviting a president to rewrite statutes to his satisfaction makes a mockery of the framers' concept of vesting in the legislative branch the sole responsibility for writing the nation's statutes. The framers hadn't reckoned, however, on Senate Democrats willing to sacrifice congressional prerogatives in the interest of achieving politically expedient objectives. The end of such constitutional malpractice in the United States Senate cannot come soon enough and must be repudiated. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Center for Security Policy Senior Fellow Fred Flights. With the nuclear talks with Iran possibly ending by a November 24 deadline, an important question is being ignored by the news media. Just how close is Iran to making a nuclear weapon? Well, Iran is much closer to constructing a nuclear bomb than the Obama administration will admit. Using its 9,000 uranium centrifuges, Iran could make enough nuclear fuel for one weapon in 2.2 to 3.5 months. Iran has enough reactor-grade uranium to fuel at least 7 nuclear bombs, possibly more. The agreement being negotiated with Iran reportedly will not reduce the number of bombs Tehran can construct and may only lengthen this deadline by 2 weeks. The nuclear talks amount to appeasement of Iran. Congress should therefore renounce these talks and demand a new approach that fully addresses the threat from Iran's nuclear program. This is Fred Flights of the Center for Security Policy. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, I'm very pleased to say, joined by Rosemary Jenks, a real leader in the United States at the moment on matters involving amnesty, as is her terrific organization, Numbers USA. You need to check out Numbers if you haven't become a member of its tremendous advocacy efforts on behalf of our federal and state enforcement of immigration laws. I urge you to do so. NumbersUSA.com is its website. Check it out and become involved. Rosemary, we're turning from what the administration has been doing of late and what the president may do as soon as this week to what happened in the election just completed. President Obama, rather surprisingly, nationalized the election and made the statement not once but twice that his policies, every single one of them, were on the ballot. Were his policies with respect to amnesty and more broadly the openness of our borders and other aspects of immigration among those policies that the American voters spoke about, and what did they say?
They absolutely were, Frank. And, you know, there was one Republican in Florida, a Cuban, who ran on the amnesty issue, was in favor of amnesty. Every single other Republican candidate ran on opposing amnesty, opposing Obama's amnesty and opposing amnesty in general. Every single one of them.
Both legislative amnesty as well as the executive fiat version.
Right. And we actually did exit polling after the election, and 74% of actual voters oppose President Obama's illegal amnesty. And that included 54% of Hispanics.
Who are endlessly reported to be all about amnesty and intent upon rewarding people who are for it and punishing people who are not. So how do you square those seemingly very, very different reports?
Well, you know, this is the problem that we have in politics today when we talk about ethnic voting blocks. Ethnic voting blocks don't really exist that way. Yes, immigrants are naturalized immigrants, presuming that they're only voting if they're citizens, which is another whole issue. But they do, in fact, tend to support democratic policies, bigger government, more social programs, Obamacare, things like that. But it's not a monolithic block. And in fact, multi-generation Hispanics, people who have been here for several generations, actually, as they join the middle class and their incomes go up, they start shifting toward more Republican, being more Republican voters. So there are a lot of Hispanic Americans who actually understand that illegal immigration means more competition for them, for jobs, for resources, for housing, and so on.
And security issues, by the way, as I recall from some of the polling we've done as well. This is not monolithic at all, and quite common sense, at least in many cases. So, Rosemary, you say that every Republican other than this one in Florida ran against both executive branch amnesty and legislative amnesty, and yet the last time I checked, I had understood that both John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, and Mitch McConnell, the incoming majority leader of the Senate, were in favor of a comprehensive immigration reform that would include amnesty of some kind for at least some of the millions of these illegal aliens in this country today. Have they changed their position, or have they simply told the voters something different than what is actually their position, in your judgment?
Yes, well, it's very clear that they told the voters a different version of the facts. And in fact, Mitch McConnell ran ads opposing amnesty. So did his Democratic opponent. But, I mean, he ran ads opposing amnesty. So when we see him come back around and say, well, now we have to pass an amnesty, we'll all know the lie. But he did, in fact, run on opposing amnesty. Honestly, I doubt that John Boehner ever mentioned it in his campaign. If he did, however, I will promise you that he said he opposed it.
And so where do you think the House and Senate Republican leadership is at the moment? Are they giving you indications as to how they would address this issue? They certainly are making a lot of noise about how unhappy they are with what the president has in mind. But is there kind of a quid pro quo that's being offered here if the president will forego doing something unilaterally that he's promised to do, particularly in the next couple of weeks, that come the new Congress, when they're running both sides of Capitol Hill, they'll take this up as a legislative task?
Well, I think there are some noises to that effect going on. In fact, there's an op-ed in The Hill today by former Senator Judd Gregg suggesting exactly that, which is a huge mistake. But I think, honestly, if the Republican leadership had their way, President Obama would do his illegal amnesty, get it over with, and move it off the table so that Republicans could then say, well, you know, there's nothing we could do. It wasn't our fault. The president did it. But they still make the Chamber of Commerce happy because the chamber gets its amnesty and the campaign contributions keep flowing. But I do not believe that the rank-and-file Republicans are going to allow that to happen.
In both the House and Senate at this point?
I think so. Well, the main thing is the House right now, because all appropriations bills have to start in the House. So if the House is willing to have the fight, then the Senate kind of gets pushed into it. And, of course, we have some of our best champions, Senator Sessions, Senators Cruz and Lee, in the Senate. So I think they will help drive the debate. But it really does have to start in the House. And I think you're seeing that John Boehner and Kevin McCarthy are kind of standing back and watching what's going on before they make a decision as to whether they're going to commit to an omnibus, which, of course, would take all their funding power out of their hands and hand it to Obama, or if they do a short-term continuing resolution to just get through to next year when the Republicans will control the Senate and then have a defunding fight, or whether they're actually willing. I mean, if Obama announces his amnesty this week, I think we're going to have this fight now, rather than in the new Congress, or it's going to start now.
Now, you've mentioned several things that I think our audience has been exposed to enough, and probably most Americans have heard something of. But just explain in a little bit more detail, if you would, Rosemary, what's on the line. If they take the step of an omnibus or a longer-term continuing resolution, what does that mean for the power of the purse, which is, short of impeachment, really the only mechanism the Congress has to prevent such actions by the president as an illegal amnesty?
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, the power of the purse really is the only viable option that Republicans have to rein in this president right now, other than impeachment. So if they pass either a long-term continuing resolution or an omnibus, that essentially means taking all of the federal funding for the next 9 months into up to September 30th of 2015 and passing it in one lump. That would mean that the Congress no longer has control over whether Obama gets funding for his amnesty, whether he gets funding to bring, you know, non-citizens who have been infected with Ebola into the United States, whether he decides to fight or not fight, or fight effectively or not fight effectively ISIS, you know, all kinds of issues, that Congress gives up their power to change the policy.
And at the moment, the leadership, you say, in the House, where all of this begins, is standing back. Have we not actually seen some indication from them in the face of what seems to be really mounting opposition from conservatives and others that they must not foreclose these options of the power of the purse to go that way instead, particularly if, as you say, the president does act this week?
There are mumblings on both sides. I don't think there's any question that the leadership's preference would be to pass an omnibus spending bill, get it out of the way, and just move on. But I do think you are absolutely right that the rank-and-file Republicans, particularly in the House, are saying no way.
Their voices are seemingly being heard and hopefully will be attended to by the leadership. Rosemary, we have to pause for one last break, but when we come back, I want to talk with you about the implications of all of this for, well, among other things, our security, employment, and not least, the Republican Party itself. That and more with Rosemary Jenks straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand. For each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
I lost my healthy 27-year-old son to influenza. Jacob wasn't someone you'd expect to die from the flu. He was strong, a martial arts athlete. After 5 weeks of fighting, Jacob died.
I'm Dr. Bill Schaffner of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Each year, influenza claims the lives of Americans of all ages, including healthy young adults like Jacob. Ask about vaccination the next time you're at your doctor's office or pharmacy. Visit adultvaccination.org.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom, it's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for our final segment of a very special edition on immigration, particularly the president's apparent determination to confer upon all number of illegal aliens a blanket amnesty that would be, according to our guest, Rosemary Jenks, permanent as a practical matter. Rosemary is, of course, the director of government relations at a highly esteemed and very valuable organization, Numbers USA. She has been working in the field of immigration studies for decades and is really one of the go-to people on this subject, certainly in Washington, and I would argue across the country. Rosemary, let's talk, having laid the predicate in terms of what the ground truth is, in terms of what President Obama has in mind, in terms of how Republicans are thinking about this, Republicans in the leadership, Republicans in the rank and file. Just to sort of wrap things up, let's talk about the implications of what Barack Obama is poised to do, or that might happen were he not to do it, but it were to be legislatively adopted, such an amnesty. maybe starting with employment. You've touched on this before, but what, as a practical matter, do you think the implications of having maybe 5 million illegal aliens suddenly given legal work permit status on the employment prospects for many, many other Americans?
Well, there's no question that when you flood the labor market, wages go down, fewer unemployed Americans will be able to compete for those jobs because they can't survive on the lower wages. And we've seen wages in this country stagnate. I think they're at the same level now that they were in 2000. All across the economic ladder, wages are stagnant. So the employment prospects are a major issue, and especially when we're still in this tepid recovery from the recession. But, you know, you have to go back even a little bit further, Frank, because if Obama gives amnesty to, say, 5 million, the clear and unequivocal result of that will be a massive new inflow of illegal aliens, which will further depress wages and increase Americans' competition for jobs.
But Rosemary, talk if you would quickly about the seeming disconnect here, because we're hearing from a lot of Democrats, most especially, that they're intent on having the minimum wage raised. If all of these people are suddenly made legal, they will have to be paid the minimum wage, will they not? What effect do you think it will have?
Well, I think I'm not an expert on this, on the minimum wage question, but I do think that if the minimum wage is legislatively increased across the nation, then we will see employers actually cutting lower-level jobs. So that means more Americans unemployed. It probably means more illegal aliens employed on the black market or paid cash under the table. But it certainly is going to harm lower-income Americans the most.
These new, newly minted American workers, formerly illegal aliens, if the president has his way, would presumably be on the dole a lot with a lot of other Americans if they can't get employment either. Let me ask you this, Rosemary, another piece of this, and especially if you're right, and I'm sure you are, this magnet effect will operate. If our borders have not been secured and this kind of amnesty is granted, what would you say are the implications for our security? As God knows who comes across that border in the future.
Well, there's no question that our national security is massively at risk right now. This president has zero intent of securing our border. So for the next 2 years at a minimum, we will have an open border. And anyone who wants to do us harm in the world knows that that border is open and that person can come here and do whatever harm he desires.
And what do you think it means that the president has apparently, among other initiatives, got in mind having the military accept people who have come here illegally among their recruits?
You know, I think this president, not only is he intent on transforming America, he is intent on decimating our military in every way possible. In attacking its morale, attacking its integrity. It is just unbelievably dangerous to put illegal aliens inside the gates with our troops. You know, it is unconscionable the things this president is doing to our military.
Well, I really think of it as a wrecking operation, and this fits the profile for sure. How about sovereignty, Rosemary Jenks? What would you say are the implications of these kinds of actions for the nation's ability, among other things? I guess one of the most fundamental pieces of sovereignty is, of course, the ability to control its borders. But are there implications as well for how we are able to conduct ourselves as a nation if we engage in this kind of behavior?
Well, Frank, I think we need to recognize that our current president does not intend for us to be a sovereign nation. He intends for us to be a citizen of the world. So I think sovereignty is not something that he puts any value on at all, and we need to recognize that the things that he is doing take away our sovereignty, and you know that's not something that you easily regain.
Turning to yet another topic, and you alluded to this earlier, Rosemary, there is evidence, despite what we're endlessly told, that there's no such thing as electoral fraud in this country, that illegal aliens have been voting
even though they do not have the right, I mean, they're not only not here legally, they don't have the right as non-citizens to vote. How serious a problem do you think this has been so far? And if the president has his way, what might be the further repercussions in that area?
Well, I think it's a much more serious problem than most people think. I mean, we have organizations like the National Council of La Raza that actually encourage so-called Hispanics, regardless of their legal status, to go out and vote. They are actively recruiting illegal aliens. And the Democratic Party, let's face it, has been caught on video and in other ways actively recruiting illegal aliens, telling them it's okay to vote, even though it's a felony.
James O'Keefe among them, having done a fairly nice job of that in the immediate run-up to the election, with campaign managers, among others, of some of these Democratic candidates. It was really proof positive of what you're talking about.
And remember that what you need, under voter ID laws, what you need to vote is a driver's license. So all of the folks Obama is giving legal status to are going to have a driver's license and be able to vote.
And I guess there is some reason to believe that what the young woman who was the bait, if you will, in James O'Keefe's videos, who claimed to have gotten a voting registration card when she got her driver's license, that kind of thing is happening on a broader scale.
Yes, absolutely. There's no question.
Let's turn finally, Rosemary Jenks, to what the implications might be, given what you've just said about voting and the propensity of many of these to be sort of big government type voters when they get the opportunity, for the Republican Party. If the Republicans were to allow this kind of amnesty to be adopted, either by presidential illegal, unconstitutional fiat or through the legislative process, what do you think might be their fate as a party?
Well, they will have no future as a party. They will, if Republicans actually pass legislatively the kind of bill that the Senate passed in 2013, they will be signing their own death warrant. There is absolutely no question, because 3/4 of newly naturalized immigrants will vote Democrat.
And that would be the end of the two-party system, or at least for the time being, there would be a need for some new party to rise from its ashes. But the demographics will be heavily stacked against it, I'm afraid. For all these reasons, Rosemary Jenks at Numbers USA, we cannot thank you enough for your leadership in clarifying what's at stake for all of us and your advocacy on behalf of our country and its laws is really appreciated. I hope you'll keep coming back to us with updates on all of these important stories, but thank you for taking the time for this special edition of Secure Freedom Radio. We'll talk with you again soon. We'll talk, I hope, with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.